as warm as I have known. A traveling boy and only passing through, but one who'll always think of you. Take my place out on the road again. I must do. Yes, I know we were lovers, but a drifter discovers that a perfect love won't always last forever. I won't say that I'll be back again, 'cause time alone will tell. So no.
And Travelling Boy. I always think she sounds very much, I've said this before, I've said it a thousand times, sounds very much like Karen Carpenter. She's got a beautiful voice, and that's a new song, Travelling Boy. Well, lots of things happening in the news today, and that's what we're going to look at now. We're going to go live to the UK and speak to Tony Gosling, regular contributor to the show, and head of Bilderberg.org, and has his own radio show in Bristol, of course, in which you can listen to that as well. I will give you some more information on that in a few moments' time. And, of course, was a former BBC employee. Good afternoon, Tony.
Hi, Dave. Actually, I was working freelance for the BBC, so officially not exactly an employee.
Okay.
But certainly I worked there for about 3.5 years, including in London, in the local radio newsroom, which, you know, we were doing a lot of international stories in there.
Did they pay you, though, Tony? Did they pay you?
Oh, of course, yeah. Good. But, I mean, you know, it was a difference. There's a bit of a subtle difference between being a freelancer and a... someone who's actually on the full-time paid staff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they could get rid of me whenever they wanted to. And that's, of course, the way which was sort of introduced by the oil industry in Britain after the Second World War. Mm. You know, the idea of having casual labour rather than, you know, full-time paid jobs.
And now, Tony, lots of stuff happening in the news. Let's start off with the bank scandal, another bank scandal that we're seeing. We're seeing Standard Chartered in trouble with the US authorities. What's your lowdown on that, Tony?
Well, I mean, it's quite clear that this is slowly unfolding, isn't it? We've got how many banks is it now that have been quite clearly involved in criminal activity?
Well, I've not got a calculator.
I was reading yesterday. I was reading yesterday in the I newspaper that there's one of the somebody who was actually prosecuted for leaking an ice cream that somebody didn't want during the riots has actually done 15 months nearly in, they haven't done that obviously because it was only 12 months ago, but 15, that's what their sentence was, months in jail. So hang on a minute, we've got all these people, the LIBOR scandal, we're talking about hundreds of billions of pounds being ripped off, stolen, thieved during the LIBOR scandal. anybody, it seems, is going to be responsible for that. There's no talk of prosecution.
No.
Even with the criminal phone hacking of the 77 victims' phones, including the Millie Dowler phones, that's taken nearly 7 years for that to actually come to court, for there to actually be charges laid down against the people responsible.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about here is really a crisis with the rule of law, and that we've got a situation where there is a sort of elite in Britain who, it seems, have been given the thumbs up that they can just do what they want and they won't get prosecuted. And the real crisis, I think, leads back to the Metropolitan Police and to Scotland Yard simply not doing their job. This is the hub of it. And the libel scandal, we had 2 weeks ago, we had the revelation from the US. Funnily enough, just after the last Prime Minister's questions after Parliament broke up for the summer, so there was no chance of asking David Cameron about it in the House of Commons, was the fact that that Lord Green, who's on the Cabinet still, he's never actually been elected. He was made a peer and then brought in as a Cabinet Minister. He was in charge of HSBC whilst billions of dollars were being laundered by HSBC in special accounts for the Mexican drug cartels. Now, these Mexican drug cartels are the kind of guys that you want to avoid, right? Mm. If you look at them the wrong way, you could find yourself amongst piles of scores of bodies left by the side of the road in Mexico, because they have absolutely no compunction about killing. Actually, entire villages have been killed by these people in the past, and Lord Green was laundering money for these people, and he is now still sitting around the Cabinet table. So, you know, we really do need to be questioning, as Brian Hoare did outside Parliament Square, on Parliament Square with his little camp, and Barbara Tucker has taken over from him and is doing the same. We need to be questioning, looking across the Houses of Parliament and questioning, is there any rule of law anymore in this country?
The problem is, Tony,
latest thing, Standard and Chartered, is just another example of where the banks are completely abusing their position. Now, as I said last time, I think, Dave, you know, the old days, there were bank robberies. That doesn't seem to happen anymore because they don't rob banks anymore, criminals. They own them.
The problem is, I mean, if the likes of me or you or the average Joe on the street was to break the law, we will get fined straight away before we even get a court case. But even if we were, we'd get a court case and we'd face the justice, and if we were guilty, fine, we'll hold our hands up to it. But we're not seeing, like you say, we're not seeing anybody sent to prison. We're not seeing anybody brought before the courts and a case made against them. And, I mean, we're talking about billions, aren't we here? I'm a bit worried at the moment, Tony, if I'm honest, with the way in which our societies are being run. When we have the likes of Mervyn King sitting at the Olympic Games, when I'm thinking, have you not got anything else to be doing? David Cameron, you know, Mariana Rajoy here has gone off on holiday. And, you know, I'm just thinking, oh, is that okay? We'll all have a holiday. And what's going to actually happen to the rest of us who can't afford a holiday or whatever? It just appears to me there's a bigger gap between, like you say, the elite and those who are actually on the streets. And I'm just wondering how long it's going to be. I say this a lot now. How long is it going to be until those on the streets are going to get so fed up that there'll just be mass civil unrest?
Well, we have to look, of course, at what's been going on in places like Greece and in Spain, to, you know, looking at crystal ball in a way, to see what may happen in Britain. And I think, you know, that is the worry, isn't it? Now, if we go back to 2000, you may not remember this, Dave. I don't know if you were looking at it at the time, but we had a massive financial crisis in Argentina with the IMF coming to the Argentinian government and basically saying, look, you know, you've got such a massive amount of debt, we are going to now have to clean out all your banks for you to pay that debt back. Yeah. And what happened was, because the banks have got kind of split loyalty, although they're national Argentinian banks, they were supporting the international financial system rather than their savers. And so what happened back in 2000 was that literally tens of billions of pounds of savings of individual Argentinians were scooped up out of their bank accounts in Argentina to give to the IMF. And of course, the night that happened, the next day, the banks were all closed, the shutters were down, and people came along sort of forlornly sticking their cards into the cash points, trying to get their money out, only to find that money had all gone.
Disgraceful.
And that money, many of which had been saved up, tens of thousands of pounds over many years, had just disappeared, and they were never going to see it again. Now, you know, at that time in Argentina, they had a succession of something like three different presidents within the space of 2 weeks,
yeah.
And there was massive political turmoil, everyone was on the streets. or at least the vast majority of the people were on the street. But, you know, that, I'm afraid, is what we're starting to look at in Europe as well now, because, you know, what we're seeing is that the leadership that we've got quite clearly don't have very much real interest of ordinary people at heart. They'd much rather be dealing with the people, the lobbyists, that come and lobby them every single day, rather than us, who they have to deal with once every 4 years. And if you look at the States, I mean, they've got their presidential election coming up at the end of this year, obviously. Now, I did a little survey from a Press TV report, and Press TV is banned in Britain, but it's one of their reports that they did on, I looked at it on YouTube, is that in the US, in the run-up to their presidential election at the end of the year, there is a roughly £15 billion, that is £15 billion, equivalent, being spent on lobbying the various the two main parties, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, by big business in the United States. And when you think about people who are giving, you know, sort of $5, $10 donation to the Barack Obama campaign, it pales into insignificance. So we've got a very difficult situation in that you've got an elite, many of whom are criminals. You know, you have to say that, looking at these various scandals, the libel scandal, the money laundering with HSBC, and this latest one, the Standard Chartered one. You know, these people are actually starting, they're starting to become mini Mubarak. That is to say, they're scared to death of any kind of real democracy sort of kicking in their country, and real justice kicking in, because they know they'll be behind bars, though.
Tony, let's just get it down to the reality, because we can talk about what's happening in world politics and so on, and that's really, really vital. And I know this is really where your heart is, and it's where my heart is as well. I met a friend this morning who is going to the town hall in Spain and saying, I have a water bill for €172, and I don't have a job, and my family don't have any work. Our benefits have run out, and we cannot afford to pay this water, and our water is going to be turned off in 5 days' time. Can you help? And unfortunately, there are people who are running banks who haven't got a clue what it would be like to not have €172 to pay your water bill.
Well, I mean, that's the sort of situation that people are starting to face right across Europe, Dave, and I think it's, you know, really important that you draw attention to it. I mean, what we seem to be getting is a kind of almost like a society's becoming like a cell dividing, with people that the haves that are desperate to hang on to their advantage over everybody else. There's a kind of almost like a spiritual boundary coming up between them and ordinary people. Now, of course, you know, everything would be fine if we still lived in a sort of peasant agrarian society where everybody has access to land, to water, and to a bit of space to grow their own food. I'm afraid we're now locked into this this industrial economy.
We've got a call coming in, Tony. Are you able to take a call? Sorry.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, it's just disappeared on me. Carry on. Sorry, Tony. I just have a call waiting.
Yeah, well, what I was saying was that, you know, we have really severed our connection with, you know, ordinary families. You know, on the say-so, that there's been this amazing industrial revolution. We can come and work in the cities for money. And the cities are going to, I think, you know, in the next few years, become unsustainable places. I mean, I'm standing in Bristol now. There are something like 7 million square feet of empty office space in the city. You know, what's happening is that the businesses have moved out of Bristol, many of them, and to other parts of the world, you know, call centres and manufacturing plants in other parts of the world. And there is, it seems to me, a complete failure of our present leadership to actually deal with this problem. I mean, you've got actually potential resource there with all those empty offices.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no real natural market rents anymore, because the market rents have to stay, or the rent, you know, if you want to rent an office, has to stay high to keep the value of the building high. Otherwise, the company that owns it will probably go bust. You know, it's one of those things on the balance sheet that you get, you know, if you decide to halve the rent in your building and start letting out property for half of what it used to be, the value of your building is going to go down by half, and it starts to look very bad on your balance sheet as a business. So that's why they don't do it.
We've got another caller.
That's potentially a fantastic resource, you know, for young people to be rented out very cheaply, for them to get businesses going and to start working.
Makes a lot of sense.
The young people, it bothers me so much these days.
We've got a caller on the line.
They see there's no opportunities for jobs anymore.
Yeah. Good afternoon, caller.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I don't want to stir the pot too much.
Go on.
But I was talking to Guardia Civil yesterday.
Yes.
Leave Spain alone. And what your guest was saying is so true.
Mm.
And what's going to happen is that more and more people are going to get very hungry.
Yes.
And they're going to go and get the food or your two bob off you, and they'll kill you for it.
Well, let's hope it never ever gets to that. But it is bad at the moment. You think it will?
Yeah, it will get to that, of course. When you're hungry, you'll go and nick something to food.
Mm. Thank you for your call, and let's hope indeed that it doesn't. And that some
let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for your
call. Well, the thing is, Dave, of course, I think your call has just made a very important contribution there, actually, because these are the sorts of things we don't like to think about. We're going to have to start thinking about them. I mean, just as the people in Argentina have to think about how they were going to feed their grandparents, back in the year 2000.
Yeah.
We do have to think about these things. And, of course, one of the spin-offs to this, which is in very much the rich superpower elite, as they're starting to be called on the British news these days, is the fact that, this is a perfect divide and rule situation. To get all of the poor people fighting each other is exactly what the rich elite want. I mean, we're facing now, and they're openly now at the Treasury, talking about an Armageddon scenario with regard to the euro crisis and finances. I mean, what they're doing is they're doing what they call an Armageddon scenario planning. That is to say, if everything goes completely wrong, what are we going to do? So the Treasury apparently have some plans now in Britain if there is a total financial collapse. But, we're starting to use these kind of almost biblical language to describe the kind of crisis that's coming along in finance. And let's not forget, we've also got the crisis in the Middle East brewing. This is really serious, what's going on in the Middle East right now. We've got another aircraft carrier has just been sent to the Gulf. This is not going away, this particular
Let's get
problem.
To the Middle East in a minute.
To put on top of all that, we've got the climate crisis.
Tony, we'll go to the Middle East in a minute. Sharon's on the phone. Good afternoon, Sharon.
Hello, good afternoon. Very quickly, Tony, it's great to hear you again. One of the Bilderberg aims is to divide the people, isn't it? So we're all fighting amongst each other and not really noticing what they're up to.
Well, that's right. And, of course, it's been quite interesting over here is that there's more mentioning of the Bilderbergs in the national press in Britain now. I'm not sure about in other parts of the world, but we see it popping up now where people who are, maybe, for example, a criminal banker or a trustee of the BBC, it's now quite often mentioned in the newspaper itself, oh, this person is also part of the Bilderberg group. So at least there is at least a bit more of an awareness that this organisation is pernicious. I mean, we should never forget that it was a former SS officer that was the chairman of Bilderberg for the first 20 years of its existence. So don't tell me there's no Nazi influence in there. That was Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. He was the chairman up until 1975 in the Lockheed scandal when he had to stop being chairman of the Bilderbergs. So, people are starting to wake up, I think, to the fact that, we could be dealing with a kind of post-World War II Nazi successionist network. And I noticed yesterday even Berlusconi in Italy was talking about, we're having to deal with the Fourth Reich here, talking about Germany and talking about the control that Merkel and the Germans have of the euro crisis. So, there seems to be an awakening that we're dealing with a kind of pernicious financial criminal gang that could even be linked back, if you want to take it all that way back, to the looted money from Europe during World War II, a sort of Nazi succession network of financial criminals. So that's at least, I think, a positive thing, is more people are becoming aware of that, and certainly they are in Italy.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay, Sharon, thank you for your call.
Can I just talk briefly about this whole sort of the Armageddon plan the British Treasury? Because I think at least there's something positive there. At least it looks like the British Treasury are starting to take seriously the fact that there may be a requirement to, completely independently run a financial system and almost wipe the slates clean and start from scratch again. But this use of the term Armageddon, it gets me a little bit nervous, and it gets me flicking through the Bible to the book of Revelation to remind myself. I mean, what's written down in there is pretty interesting in that they do talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Now, I don't want to get people scared, because this whole business is actually there to reassure us. If we see what are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, it starts with the white horse, the red horse, then the black horse and the pale horse, the idea being that if this kind of scenario does come on the scene and we start seeing these unfolding in world events, the idea of the Book of Revelation is actually there to reassure us, to say, don't get scared, don't get too worried. I mean, it's going to be nasty, but it's all part of God's plan. And I think it might be interesting to watch world events over the next few years to see if, you know, the events talked about by the four horsemen of the apocalypse, that is to say, the first one is the white horse, then the second one is very much symbolized, the red horse is symbolized by world war breaking out, then the black horse is symbolizes famine and disease, and the pale horse symbolizes lots of people dying because of these diseases. I mean, you can look at that for yourself, yeah. And it's, most people have got a Bible. It's quite interesting opening up, and then, you know, it may be quite an interesting time to come as we start to compare what's happening in the world to events that prophesied, you know, 2,000 years ago. I mean, I find that quite an interesting prospect, and I hope the Treasury are looking at it like that too.
Well, Tony, one of the interesting things I picked upon over the weekend, I was listening to somebody, and they were reading from Isaiah 17, and they were saying, I think it's Isaiah 17, I may be wrong, so don't quote me on that, but somewhere around that area, saying that in the end times Damascus will be left to rack and ruin. And I'm thinking, well, you know, we're seeing it in Syria, you know, possibly they'll be fighting in Damascus at some point in the next couple of weeks. Who knows what's going to happen next?
Well, I mean, certainly in Syria, it seems that there's an attempt to take over Aleppo, and really to wreck Aleppo during the Olympics. This seems to me pretty obvious as a media person. Whilst everyone's attention is focused on the Olympics over these 2 weeks, there is a massive assault going on in Aleppo.
Yes.
I mean, even Robert Fisk, bless him, from The Independent, you know, he's saying, oh, the Assad assault on Aleppo. Hang on a minute. What happened was, about a week ago, is there was a massive assault by the Free Syrian Army, who was supported by NATO, they're supported by Qatar, and Saudi Arabia and Turkey. They actually assaulted Aleppo, not the Assad government troops. They have come in because Aleppo's under assault. And the first place they went for, Dave, was the sort of place you would probably be hanging out if you were there. That is to say, their radio station and their TV station came under a massive assault and fire, and they even kidnapped one of the presenters of Syrian TV and executed the guy because he was saying things on television that they didn't like. Now, this is the character of this Free Syrian Army, and I would argue that what NATO are doing is playing a pretty cynical game here, and it's going up to these Muslims who are faithful believers in the Quran, and then saying basically, look, it says here in the Quran that you're going to take over the Middle East, and it's all prophesied, so you've got to go out there and kill the unbelievers, and this guy, Assad, you know, people like Gaddafi, they are the unbelievers, and they're actually using NATO and NATO headquarters in Brussels. You know, what they're doing, I think, is supplying the weapons and also the, if you want, the ideological will to fight to actually egg on the Al-Qaeda and these Muslim extremists to topple these governments.
But that's letting Assad off the hook, isn't it?
I mean, they're playing, I think it's fair to say they're playing with fire by actually, you know, getting these people going. You know, up until a few years ago, I thought Al-Qaeda was like the enemy. Didn't they bomb the World Trade Center? But now it seems NATO are quite happy to do deals with them if they will fight NATO's enemies. People and NATO want out of the way.
Tony, is that not saying to Bashar al-Assad that actually, you know what, he's actually quite a good guy and really is blameless in all of this? That can't be true, surely not.
Look, I think most world leaders, Dave, between you and me, are pretty nasty people. I think they have to be pretty ruthless to get to positions where they are. But ultimately, what's happened here is there's been a resolution a couple of weeks ago at the United Nations Security Council by the US, which is blocked by Russia and China. They are saying, no, you are not going into Syria like you did in Libya, because we don't trust you anymore. We allowed you to do your no-fly zone over Libya, and then you basically put troops on the ground. You did all sorts of things that were not in that resolution. So we are not going to allow you to conduct the same kind of covert operation to fund the Al-Qaeda rebels in Syria, just as you did in Libya. So they don't trust them. But what's going on now with William Hague and the NATO leaders is they have basically stuck two fingers up at the Chinese and the Russians, and they're saying, well, we don't really care what you say. We're going to go into Syria and sort the situation out. And, I mean, I'm not saying that Assad is the greatest guy on earth, but I'll tell you what, he's a leader of a sovereign country, and it's not NATO's job. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization is a defensive organization. organisation to defend us from attack from the Russians. It's not up to them to be actually moving into places like Syria or Libya and conducting covert operations. I mean, the former SAS people have been training these al-Qaeda people. This is like a red rag to a bull to the Russians and the Chinese, and I noticed that the Chinese government summoned the US ambassador a couple of days ago as well.
Yes.
saying, you know, what the hell do you think you're doing? Because this is really not attacking Assad. It's attacking Chinese and Russian influence in the Middle East, and it could lead to, you know, a serious conflagration. I'm also not convinced that the Iranians don't have nuclear weapons. I mean, I said this at a talk last week. Roger Cook and the Cook Report, the program he used to do in the 1990s, yes, which was pulled in 1997, even though it had 10 million viewers and whenever it was on, he discovered that weapons-grade plutonium was available on the black market. So is it not, if Roger Cook, the TV reporting, can get hold of weapons-grade plutonium on the black market, then I'm sure that the Iranian government have got the wherewithal to get hold of weapons-grade plutonium. They don't need to start. They don't need to start with the old nuclear pile and a centrifuge. Hmm. Anyway, I mean, I think there's all sorts of games being played. Certainly, it's very, you know, my involvement with the story to do with the G4S security scandal.
Tony,
and
we're going to have to round it up there, I'm afraid, because there's
okay,
so much.
I will round it up by saying that's taught me that the British, certainly the London-based media, is very controlled. And, you know, we're not necessarily being told the truth about whether or not the Iranians have got nuclear weapons. I think, you know, what's happening now is NATO playing with fire. They should just get out of Syria and allow the Syrian people to make their own decisions rather than getting arms to them through Turkey, which, of course, is a NATO country and, you know, wants to see the Syrian regime go down.
Mm. Tony, are you getting any more opportunities with Russia Today and people like channels like that at the moment?
Again?
Are you getting any more opportunities on Russia, on RT Russia Today and different channels like that?
From time to time, they give me a call. But, okay, I think for your listeners, I'd advise they tune in if they can. I hate to sort of steal any of your listeners, but if they can tune into our show on a Friday, we're at www.thisweek.org.uk, and Friday drive time, they can have a listen. What we try and do is, you know, put the politicians through their paces in the first hour, and in the second hour do some a bit of investigative journalism into just why our country is like it is, and, you know, push the boat out a little bit and do a bit of the old-fashioned stuff like you used to get on World in Action. You know, it's actually not that difficult with the radio. You know, you get somebody on the line, like I'm on the line to you now, and you can actually thrash out the issues. I'm afraid this is something that our mainstream press has just completely given up for in Britain.
Panorama,
seems to be just as owned as our political parties. You know, the political parties seem to be owned by the rich and the banksters, as well as the media. So,
Tony, I'm going to have to go because I've got about 3, 4, 5 commercial breaks in before the hour. Tony, Bilderberg.org, of course, and if you want to get more on Tony Gosling there, you can, of course, and no doubt he will be back on our airwaves with myself at some point in the next few weeks. So, Tony, thanks very much. Lots to do, and keep your ear to the ground.
Thanks ever so much for the plug again, Dave, and anytime, I'm always happy to come on. Thanks.
Cheers, Tony. Bye-bye now.